Hello, and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod, with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, it's a delight to welcome back... Hang on, what have I written here? Welcome One Radio.
Member of the Guild of Honourable Hillocks, or something.
It's a delight to welcome One Radio... I don't know what that means.
One is that I'm One Radio.
One Radio. Right. In this episode, it's a delight to welcome back radio and TV comedy writer, author, and co-host of the brilliant Rule of Three podcast, Jason Hazley.
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Hello.
Lovely to see you again. You've picked a very unusual album.
Well, you say that.
I do.
I picked the only actual missing Beatles album, which is Get Back, which I just adore. I love this album, and to me, it is not missing. To me, it is part of the canon. It comes between the White Album and Abbey Road and makes absolute sense there. I mean, it really does. I will die on this hill. It makes perfect sense there. I was doing a bit of reading before coming here, and I read... I think it was McCartney saying he'd listened back to it and he said, well, and this was before they decided to shelve it. He listened back to it and said, oh, it's pretty brave, isn't it? Now, I don't understand that at all, because when I listen to it, I think, no, this isn't a brave album. This is exactly what should have happened after the White Album and before Abbey Road. It just makes so much sense sitting there. It really does.
Yeah.
You're a fan as well?
I love it. I love it. I do struggle with Let It Be because of the Spectre production.
Shall we do that first? Shall we get Let It Be out of the way?
Shall we?
Shall we dig at its grave? Oh, I know. I mean, listen, I think... well, everybody's
Spectre
allowed to
Spectre did it in a week, didn't he? He remixed the whole thing in a week.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many days he was working, hours he was working every day in that week. No, it's a bit like that. Ruttles joke, isn't it? Their first album was recorded in less than an hour. The second one took even longer. Yeah. It's. I think everybody's allowed to make a mistake in their career, but for the Beatles to make the last thing they did such a mistake, I mean, it's not just the sound of the album, the things that Spectre did to those songs. I mean, he actually damaged them, you know, those songs. Just something as simple as slowing Across the Universe down by an entire semitone, turning it into this thing that sounds like it's dying rather than this beautiful, uplifting, you know, never-ending love song, which is what it basically was in its initial iteration. And there are lots of things wrong with Let It Be. You know, the artwork's not particularly good, and the track listing is not particularly good, and... just to take those two pretty arbitrary examples, compare the artwork for Get Back, which is the full circle. It was the Beatles coming full circle. Here we are again, back in Manchester Square. It's Angus McBean taking the photo again. We're in the same place, except we're really hairy now. We basically look like the, what they call the animal quackers. Remember those?
Oh, do like Rory the Lion.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
they're just like four kind of plushies, you know, Beatles plushies standing in Manchester Square. This has got off to a bad start, hasn't it? So, yeah, Let It Be. I think forget Let It Be. And also, I mean, I said one mistake, didn't I? Well, I had such high hopes for Let It Be Naked, but what a missed opportunity that record is. My word, you know. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. I could see, it feels like please anybody correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it feels like Paul clawing back some legacy there going, but they're meant to have sounded like this. Now then, yes, but, .. I mean, you could just have put Get Back out. You still could put Get Back out.
Yeah.
And I suspect one day it will come out, you know? I mean, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, it was almost like, Let It Be Naked was gone through a committee adhering to Paul's...
I think that's very accurate.
And it was also, for me, it was just all about Long and Winding Road. He just wanted that fixed.
Yeah.
And then everything else had to be... You know, Across the Universe is pretty well just John on acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Recorded February 68, so it's a completely different Beatles almost.
Yeah.
And, yeah, doesn't seem to... Don't know.
It's an album I've got... I'm one of these people who the Beatles could sell anything to.
yeah.
We'll come back to that. And so, of course, I bought it. But I genuinely, I think it might be one of the Beatles albums I've listened to the least. You know, that, and I think I've listened to Love more than I have Let It Be Naked.
Mm.
And that's kind of saying something.
Yeah.
It really is. And I was looking at the timeline of this. November 22nd of November 68, the White Album comes out. Then they were going to do some. They were going to do a live gig or two, weren't they, in December at the Roundhouse?
Mm.
And that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But at the end of January, they end up on the roof of Savile Row, playing for 42 minutes before the police turf them off. And then Abbey Road comes out September 69. So between November 68 and September 69, you've got the Get Back single in April 69 and the Ballad of John Yoko single at the end of May 69. I then went and had a look at the gap between when you finish an album and when it comes out. With the White Album, it was 5 weeks. With Abbey Road, it was 3.5 weeks. So I calculated that the mix of Get Back that we're going to listen to, 28th of May, even if it had gone 5 weeks, the album Get Back could have been out before we landed on the moon.
Mm. I'd never thought about it that way before.
So you've got like an early July album, yeah. And this would have, which would have fitted perfectly between the November White Album and the September Abbey Road.
Absolutely, yeah.
So listen, let's rewrite history and say it came out, and here we are talking about an album which is not missing at all, but there is a terrible missing one called Let It Be, which apparently isn't very good. See how the world feels better now I've said that.
It does, yeah. I think Glyn Johns, who produced this, he and George were both there during the sessions, and poor old George, his role at the time, you know, after the White Album especially, he'd been kind of pushed away. Here he was effectively just sitting there reading the newspaper.
Mm.
And the Beatles were kind of turning to Glyn for advice, saying, Glyn, you know, help us out with this. So he had a very hands-on role throughout it.
Mm.
He did a few mixes of this. Originally he did just an old rockers mix, which was just all the rock and roll covers. Then he did the one that we're going to talk about, but they couldn't use this because Teddy Boy, which is included on this, wasn't going to be in the film. So then he did another one after that. And eventually it was just, no, we're not going to use any of them. Gave it to Phil Spector, who sort of bashed it off in a week. And I love Glyn's comment where he was saying it's a shame that Phil Spector couldn't have been arrested earlier because, you know, they could have released my album.
Right, Glyn wins. The thing that John Lennon said, which sounded like he was trying to justify what Spector did. Or he may have liked it. I think John Lennon did genuinely like Spector's production. So did George Harrison, quite clearly, but I don't. Lennon said that Spector was handed the shittiest load of badly recorded shit with a lousy feeling to it ever. And honestly, you listen to this album, that is not true.
No.
It is simply not true. It's very well recorded. Okay, three of the songs are live on the roof. But it's very well recorded. The mix I've got, and it's probably the same one that you've got, because I guess there's just only so many going round, sounds absolutely terrific. It's a really good mix. It's a good mix. Mm. It's also, and I'm sure we'll come on to this, but it is a genius bit of track listing as well.
Yes, definitely.
As a running order goes, it is unbeatable. It really is.
Yeah.
So Glyn Johns, I think, you know, every available hat doff to him.
Originally, his first mix of the album was throwing in all this fly-on-the-wall stuff that kind of makes it for me. But originally, the Beatles said, no, we don't like that. Do it again. They just wanted a standard album with songs, no talk in between, no messing around. And eventually, they came around to his idea when they gave it to Spector. But for this, it's, like you were saying, the first four tracks of Let It Be are quite dour. You know, they're not as uplifting as the songs on here. And the first song on this album is One After 909.
this is a hell of an opener. The night. Okay, so let's go right from the off, shall we? You drop the needle on this the first time. The first thing you hear is Billy Preston doing a little glissando on a Fender. Mm. You know, and it's lovely. It immediately says this is going to be playful. Okay, you ready for this? You're going to enjoy this. Also, you're going to hear behind the scenes. Mm. So all the groundwork is done in the first 3 or 4 seconds of this, and then enter the Beatles. And boy, do they kick the door down with this song. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant arrangement. It's a brilliant mix. And they're playing it like they fucking mean it. They really do. Compared to the early recording of One After 99 from sort of 62, 63, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, which sounds like some very polite boys, which they never were. This one is really, these guys are going for it and they're having fun.
Yes. Yeah. It's just insouciant. And Billy Preston, obviously, by this time, had joined the band. Well, not joined the band, but he was there due to George.
Yeah.
And their spirits noticeably lift up. So, for me, this is the perfect start. You know, it's the Beatles in good spirits. They've got Billy there doing his thing.
Yeah.
And what more uplifting song, you know, compared to Two of Us, which is a beautiful song, but it's not an album opener.
No, it's a funny opener, isn't it? Well, it's not. Yeah, you're right. It's not an opener, really. That's why it's yet another mistake. Thanks, Phil. But this is the way to open an album. You know, George Martin, wasn't it, who once said it was pretty easy to do track listings because you just started with the thing that was obviously the one that opened the side, and you ended with the one that you couldn't put anything after. You know, so you go, well, actually, which of these songs here, these sort of 11, 12 songs, opens this album? Answer, this one. Here it is. Mm. There you go. It's a belter. And it sort of lays the runway for the rest of the album. It says this is going to be fun. It's going to be slightly untidy. Paul, I think it was McCartney who said, we wanted to make a record where you could hear the Beatles getting their act together.
Mm.
And you go, yeah, that's what this sounds like. And also this does follow perfectly from some of the places where the White Album left off.
Mm. Oh, definitely.
You know, with a sort of a carefreeness.
Mm.
You know, it's a very... The odd thing about Let It Be film and album is that they're both rather depressing. And, I mean, even the sort of colour palette in the film is depressing, weirdly, you know. This is the opposite. And I was very struck by that, listening to it again today. There was an episode of Fab Forecast that our friend Mark Lewison did. Mm. When he had gone back and he'd listened to everything from the A and B rolls from January 69. To revise, he actually spent the month in synchronicity with the Beatles, you know, 50 years after they'd done it.
Yeah.
And he came out the other side saying, I think we've got this wrong. I think they were having quite a lot of fun, actually, apart from the, you know, there were a few rows and things and whatever you want, bit of play, I'll play it.
Yeah.
And that amazing bit in George Harrison's diary where he says, I wrote this down. I need to read this out with the punctuation in it. And I don't like reading punctuation, but you need it for this. This is George Harrison's diary, Friday, 10th of January, 1968. Rehearsed until lunchtime, comma, left the Beatles, comma, went home. In the middle, as a subclause, is left the Beatles.
Yeah. It's too, and you forget that was only... They started on the 2nd.
Yeah.
So it's days after. Nah, I've had enough.
But apart from that, and that's the thing about this album, which, and again, another hat off to Glyn Johns for putting this together so cleverly, choosing the right bits of kind of chatter and background talk and things, so that firstly you hear that there's a film crew there, you know, because you hear clapperboards and people calling for quiet and stuff like that, and take numbers. And also you hear that they're enjoying themselves.
Yes.
And all that enjoyment, it just comes bursting out of One After 909, which is why this is how this album opens. This album that did come out, which is a part of the Beatles canon, this is how it opened.
It is. It's the same sort of, you think the last proper rock and roller, as in cover, was on Help, Dizzy Miss Lizzy.
Yeah.
We've been through psychedelia, post-India, transcendental meditation, and now this is them, but with it's 1965 Beatles in 1969.
Yes.
That enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is completely at odds with what the Let It Be album.
And that same kind of, I guess the same sort of energy that they would have had to work as hard as they did in Hamburg as well.
Mm.
you know, because their timetable there was ridiculous, and they were basically sleeping in a bin. And, you know, that, so they must have required as many kind of chemicals and, you know, just sort of reserves of energy as they could to keep it together. But it sounds like they've got all that here. You know, yeah. You can hear all that energy.
Mm.
They, you know, despite what the clearly the group collectively eventually thought of this, it puts them in a great light. You know, they sound like a band who are together, who can play, who can do this stuff, who are enjoying it, who've got loads of energy left. There's no sense here, unlike in Let It Be, that this is a band coming to the end of their career.
No.
At all.
No. No.
At all. You know, this in the world in which this did come out, it's one of their best regarded albums, isn't it?
It is.
Boys,
what?
What does it do? Because I'm in love.
Which one are we doing?
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Save the last dance for me.
You can dance every dance with a guy holding and let him hold you tight.
Next. Rocker, Save the Last Dance for Me.
This is another one of these nice things. It's you know, we're going to mess around. So here we are just messing around with Save the Last Dance for Me, which then turns into...
Don't Let Me Down.
Don't Let Me Down. And Rocker is just... That's a bit of noodling, isn't it? Again,
yeah.
It's like... It's the same thing as Billy Preston's Glissando.
Yeah. But it's following One After 909.
Yeah.
With another rocker.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so uplifting.
It's great.
69
it's great.
Beatles, I think.
It's bags of energy. Bags of energy. And then, Don't Let Me Down. I mean, where'd you go with this one? This is the best thing, the best Lennon song on this album.
Mm.
And it might be one of the best Lennon songs. It's absolutely beautiful.
Don't let me
wasn't on Let It Be. It's another mark in the minus column on the spectrograph.
Yeah.
yes, that doesn't work. I'll rewrite it.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, why wouldn't you put this? Why wouldn't you put this on Let It Be? It's such a good song. It's a beautiful song. A great performance as well.
Mm.
You know.
And they did it so many times during the film.
Yeah, they
during
did,
the
didn't they?
Rehearsals. How could you miss? But then Glyn Johns was there. That's a different Spectre, wasn't? So he's just got some tapes.
Yeah, no, maybe he couldn't be bothered with. Oh, so he's got no taste either. What? What? No judgment, no taste, no moral compass. What did the man have going for him? Fuck his wall of sound. it's weird. Actually, do you know what? Phil Spector's sound, very influential, very boring. Brian Wilson picked it apart a bit and made it about 75 times more interesting.
Yeah. With more dynamics, I think.
With more dynamics,
it's just
yeah.
pure wall of sound, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or film stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, let's...
Let's never speak of him
because,
again.
Yes, because luckily the version he did didn't come out and this did.
No.
What is there to say about this song? Ringo's drumming. This is going to be a theme, obviously, but Ringo's drumming on this—that lovely kind of Latin thing that he does on the ride cymbal. The dum 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 dum. Ringo could do everything, couldn't he? He has so many little spots where he shines on this. I was listening to it this morning. I was starting to cling on to things that Ringo was doing, going. You're really at the top of your game at this point. You are really at the top of your game, Ringo. I mean, you were always a very good drummer, but I think the drumming on this album is extraordinary. The class of it, wow.
Mm. And I love the playfulness between John and Paul, because you've got John saying, "Yes, she did," and then Paul jumps in, "Yes, she done," playing on the words.
She done me good. Yes, she did. Yes, she done.
It's nice to hear them playful together.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Not, you know, history says they weren't, but they were.
I know, and the film says they weren't, you know, which is...
I think the Peter Jackson film is supposed to be addressing that, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I hope it does, because frankly, there is obviously a good news version of the Beatles' January 69, because we're listening to it here, you know? Here it is. I mean, if he wanted to just cut a film around the album Get Back that came out, he could happily do that, you know?
Yes.
The Peter Jackson film Get Back, which came out in 1969, you know? Oh dear! I mean, I was talking to someone yesterday about how creatives tend to build their own worlds, and I think we can all see what's going on here, can't we?
It works for me.
Yep.
Upon it, you can celebrate anything you want. Yes, you can celebrate anything you want.
Next, we have Dig a Pony.
Yeah, this is a funny little beast, isn't it? It's kind of,
and this is probably the one that's most notably different from the Let It Be version.
Yes,
because you've got the intro,
which is great. Again, this version is better than the one that's on Let It Be. I wonder why that is. It's not. It's one of these ones where Lennon really couldn't give a shit about the lyrics anymore, could he? And it sort of doesn't matter here.
No.
I mean, I think it does in Dig It. I just think actually you really are at the bottom of the barrel now. But here, I think he gets away with it here because it is.
Yeah.
Because it's. There's nothing. This song appears to be about nothing, although it is saying, like this, like that, but all I want is you, which is a nice sentiment, and very much where Lennon was at the time. You know, he was just basically staring into the eyes of his wife, who he simply adored. And that's fine with me. If you want to write about that, great. Yeah. Please do.
Yeah. But I think this version. Because it starts with that and starts and ends with, all I want is you.
Yeah.
By removing that, you're kind of removing the focus. So the focus is on the verse with, although you can syndicate any boat you wrote. What's that about? And the all I want is you bit, which is kind of the key focus, is love for Yoko, is sort of swept under the carpet.
Yeah.
So it's changed the meaning of the song almost.
Yeah, yeah. But now, Ringo again in this.
Oh, yeah.
Just, wow. I was listening to this morning, and it's what he does with the hi-hats in this. So it's a very slow 6/8, and it's on the 4 and 5 where he hits a just open hi-hat, so the two hats sizzle together, and then closes it on 5, so you get boom,
yeah,
boom, and it's brilliant. It's the kind of thing which you can only do as a drummer if you judge it really well. And he's judging it perfectly, absolutely perfectly, every time. It's great. It's such a good feel. Now, it's one of those ones where Ringo's hardly doing much, you know, and yet it's brilliant.
Yeah. You think how it's quite a slow song, and there's not much space for him to do anything, really, other than boom.
Yeah.
But just that extra little hi-hat, just ooh.
Yeah, just one tiny little filigree like that, you know.
He was good at that, wasn't he? Already?
Yeah, he was great at that. And then there's also these brilliant... Where they get to with there's a thing later on in Teddy Boy where McCartney's going, it just sort of falls away there, doesn't it? You know, about a bit in the song where there's nothing happening, and this one, all those available bits are filled very cleverly. So you, after all I want is you, and you get that, just two bars of good guitar licks, you know, and you get those lovely two part harmonies on the big cars, brilliant.
I think, what you were saying is it's the atmosphere is where you've got the small talk in between.
By the way, this is the first of the three songs that are in A next to each other on this side of the album. So you've got three songs all in the same key, which is the sort of thing you wouldn't usually do if you were banding an album, because you go, I think we need to feel there's a bit more difference here. But actually, it works very well, especially Dig a Pony into I've Got a Feeling, because that's almost done without a rill. They just slide into each other, which is beautiful.
You get that you know, the guitar.
When you're in. You can play clips, can't you, Chris? I don't want people to have to listen to me singing guitar
actually,
riffs.
Yeah, if you could just do that drum fill again.
Idiots singing guitar riffs, yeah.
I've got a feeling deep inside, oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've got a feeling I can.
And now we do move on to I've Got a Feeling.
Fantastic song. Fantastic song. It's one of those ones where McCartney is doing the kind of vocal that you think might finish him off, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like he's going to tear something the way he's going through this.
Mm.
And he does it with such brilliant conviction. And again, this is a genuine kind of a collaboration, isn't it? Because you've got Everybody Had a Hard Year, you know, which is John coming in with his bit. It's his woke up, got out of bed, basically.
Yes, yeah.
And he just chucks it into this song, and it works really well.
Yeah.
I think there are demos, aren't there, of Everybody Had a Hard Year on its own as a separate thing. Yeah.
It sounds almost like he's doing his Julia guitar pick.
Yes, yeah, that, yes. The one that, it's Donovan, actually. Yeah. I taught that. Did you, Donovan? Did you, Donovan? Did you, Donovan? yeah. Poor old Donovan. Joel and I once wrote a sketch which Kevin Eldon didn't use, in which, Donovan was taking credit for all sorts of things, but he always did it in the third person, you know, like the current president of the United States talks about himself. So Donovan was, I remember back in 66 when Donovan was hanging out with Jimi Hendrix and Mary Quant, and Donovan was very much at the time. We just did that, and unfortunately we didn't use it because, I don't know, maybe Kev's a friend of Donovan.
Well, this is my father.
Yeah. Oh, he's your father, yeah. I've got a feeling. This is... Now, Parche, the slight downer I've got on the film Let It Be, it has one of the funniest moments in it during this song. When all these years I've been wandering around, wondering why come nobody told me, well, I've been looking for somebody who looked like you, and you've got that amazing guitar moment, with the bends in it. And there's a point at which in the film where they cut away from that to this indignant old woman on the pavement who says, I just don't see that it makes any sense. And it's so funny. I really don't think the filmmakers had any idea how funny that scene is.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. It's one of the very few moments of humour in that film, really.
Yes, it is, yeah. I'm really looking forward to this new one. I've got so much to do.
Great, again, more brilliant Ringo in this as well.
Mm.
Just his little jump, boom, 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 pickups, you know. Yeah. They're lovely. Lovely.
I think George on this shines as well, his, apart from the string bending thing.
Yeah.
Some of the little licks he does in between the... is just a proper rock... level guitar.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? And this is one of the... Is this one of the three from the roof?
Yeah.
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 Wow. I mean, they don't sound...
In January.
They don't sound cold, do they? I mean, and it must have been absolutely fucking freezing. Yeah. You're on a roof.
Yeah.
It's the 30th of January, isn't it? Mm. So it's not... I mean, we're recording this in late February, and it's still only about 6 degrees outside.
Yeah.
God, I wonder what the weather was like that day. Mark Lewison will know the temperature. If you ask him what the temperature was on the rooftop, he will know, and he will know the wind speed and direction.
If you could get in touch,
I promise you.
I'd really appreciate it.
I mean, I imagine he's even got the Beaufort scale down for this one. And they do not sound cold. Because it was windy, wasn't it? You can tell from the footage. But this is great. They're playing
John mentions it, doesn't he? He says, oh, it's so hard, you know.
Yeah,
fingers are getting cold or whatever.
And he's playing in... He's wearing someone's fur.
He's wearing Yoko's fur coat.
Yeah.
So I don't know what Yoko had on. She must have been freezing.
What kind of a... I mean, really, they are rocking a hell of a look up there, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because isn't Ringo wearing Maureen's rain jacket or something? It's a red rain jacket?
Yeah.
And it was extraordinary. You know, if the album Let It Be had ever come out, there was going to be a book with it in the original box, yeah. I wonder if I could use that on World Book Day and send my kid to school dressed as one of the Beatles on the roof.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I want you, if anyone asks you, you're John Lennon on the roof. Just say that. So what does that mean, Daddy? Don't worry. Yeah, don't worry. And which book is it from again?
It doesn't exist. We end side one with Get Back. So the again, last. The placing of this.
Mm. It's brilliant. It's such good track listing, this. This is the third in the A cycle.
Yeah.
And what we have had hints at in the previous one, of Billy Preston just filling in with such, such flair and kind of liquidity and groove. And then in Get Back... In most of Get Back, you barely notice him, but he's there underneath. You can just hear him. He's quite far back in the mix, but he's adding such important information so cleverly and so subtly.
Mm.
It's a really subtle bit of playing.
Yeah. And, you know, credited on the single as well, which was...
Yes.
You know, you think they've worked with so many session musicians before, you know, as in horn sections and string... None of which got credited, but you know he was on a number one single, Beatles and Billy Preston. I guess it maybe because he was on Apple as well.
Maybe, yeah. And he was a pal of theirs. Hamburg, they met him.
Yeah.
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 I mean, he's such an important bit of this album as well, actually. I mean, they could have put the Beatles with Billy Preston on the cover of the Get Back album that came out in early July 1969. Because things like, you know... His solo in Don't Let Me Down is phenomenal.
Oh.
I was listening to that again today, and now there's something... I've played Rhodes, and this is a Rhodes that he's playing, a Rhodes 73, and it's... They're a beautiful instrument. They were really quite new at the time as well. The first example I can find of anybody playing a Rhodes on a rock record is an unreleased Beach Boys tune from the Smile Sessions. So that would have been 66, late 66, November 66, something like that.
Wow.
So they hadn't been around long. Billy not only has he got this instrument absolutely down pat, but he's doing something with it, especially in Don't Let Me Down. There's something he does in there, but all over the album. He makes it sound, you know how on a guitar you can slide, and even though you're hitting frets, you can bend strings, so there are notes between the notes, right? And you can do that on a violin, you can do it on a wind instrument. You can't do it on a keyboard instrument, because in front of you on a keyboard, there are only a given number of keys. I don't know how he does it, but he makes it sound like there are notes between the notes when he's playing that solo, and I've got a feeling that... And it's so fluid, it all just runs together beautifully. Listening back to it again today... He's also playing that in octaves. So not only is he improvising that, but both hands are doing the same thing at the same time on the spot. Ah, extraordinary. An extraordinary keyboard player.
Yeah, what a genius.
Absolutely amazing. And here he is in Get Back doing very little, but just adding stuff, which is just filling in things for you.
Well, he's got a solo, hasn't he?
So. Yeah, yeah. But it's in the chorus. Listen in the chorus. See if you can find him. He is there. But there's he's doing very little. It's really clever. Such brilliant judgment.
Yeah.
Such great judgment. This it's a great song. It's a great way of ending the first side of the album as well.
Yeah.
I was reading that it had some pretty ripe lyrics in an earlier version because McCartney was writing explicitly about bigotry, basically, wasn't he?
Mm.
But unfortunately, it sounded like... I'm very glad he dropped the lyrics that he did because it sounded like he might have written something that could have accidentally been co-opted by the very people he didn't like who he was writing about.
Yeah, well, you know, it was very subtle, wasn't it? He, I mean, clearly they didn't think that, I think the lyrics were taking the piss out of people that were coming out with all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but you're jumping on the Johnny Spate spectrum there, aren't you, where unfortunately you write a horrible old racist man and people go, well, I love him, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Not because he's a comic character, but because you're espousing his politics. You know, whoops, wrong.
Yeah. I think on this non-existent Let It Be album, the only thing you can say is the ending. I mean, this is the full version, single version.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely superb. But obviously we're missing the, on behalf of the group, you know, I'd like to say thank you.
Except we get that at the end of the very first track on here, don't we? It's the first thing. They finish One After 909, and John says, I'd like to say thanks on behalf of the group. And that's, you go, great, you've got that right out of the blocks. I mean, Glyn Johns, yet again, have another medal. God. Ah, he did such a good job. He did such a good job.
Lovely girl, I love you. Because you're sweet and lovely girl, it's true. I love you more than ever, girl, I do.
Flipping over to side two, For You Blue.
Except before then, a gin and tonic. Because the first thing you hear, and again, this speaks to this album's playfulness, the first thing you hear on this is the sound of some ice chinking in a glass. Yeah. Now, I honestly did think of going on a deep dive and trying to work out what they might have been drinking, but I think there's...
No.
I've read Gooden's book about the Beatles on drugs, and I was going to go and consult that this morning and go, I wonder if there's anything about what they like to drink, and thought, oh, don't be ridiculous. The world does not need this. But it's just a mark of this is the thing that I'd forgotten about this album. I know this album very well because obviously I've owned it since it came out in 69. But what I've forgotten about this album is how much charm it has. It is so charming. Yeah. Not only is it a good album and the correct album to follow the White Album and to come before Abbey Road, but it's full of charm. Charm in the kind of outtakes, in the chatter, in the performances. There's I'd like to say a looseness, but that's wrong, because they're all very tight. This is a very tight performance by this band. What it is a relaxed but tight performance. You know, you can hear the enjoyment, and it's so charming. It's just an album which immediately says, listen, I'm your friend. I like you, you know? And you go, yeah, that's good, because I've heard you, and I like you. You're my friend as well. Yeah terrific. Yeah. And that's what the front of this album, this side is, you know. Have a gin and tonic. Here comes a song. And it's a strange one, because this is a very slight George Harrison song.
Yeah, but in this context, that works for it, I think.
Yeah, it works brilliantly.
Surrounded by these very heavy songs.
The only Harrison song on this album as well.
Yeah, well, on this version, we lose I, Me, Mine and Across the Universe.
Yeah. And I, Me, Mine is a quite a sad song, isn't it, actually?
Mm.
That's probably why it was never released. Yeah, again, this is a lovely little. There's no bass on this tune, is there?
No.
So there is Harrison playing capo on the fifth fret. Is going to be my guess. So it's all quite high pitched guitar. I presume it's John on lap slide. Steel. Is it on slide? Yeah.
Steel. Sorry.
Yeah, and Ringo's on brushes, I think, or rakes. Brushes, I think. And who's that leave us with? Paul.
Paul's on a piano.
But there's some intervention between the hammers and the strings, aren't there?
It's rolled up newspaper.
It is paper, is it? Yeah. I thought it might be.
George Martin physically stuffed loads of newspaper in between the strings.
Oh wow!
Give that tack it, because George was saying I want it to sound like those old honky tonk pianos. So rather than mess around in the studio, which they couldn't, George literally just got some newspaper, shoved it all in. And it's a great sound.
That's great. I didn't know that. That's great. Because at Abbey Road, of course, where they weren't, they had a tack piano, didn't they?
And that
was a piano with drawing pins in the hammer. So you got that great hammering sound that you get from sort of, you think kind of saloon bars in Westerns. That noise. Yeah. So this is just paper. That's interesting because, of course, McCartney was, and I imagine John Lennon was as well because of Yoko, would have been quite into the whole John Cage scene. And John Cage started devising something called the prepared piano, where he actually told you to put given things between strings on the piano.
Oh, really?
There'd be maps of it at the front of the school, you know, saying, I want a 1/8 grub screw between the D and the E, you know. So basically the notes didn't sound necessarily anything like piano notes. They could have just sounded like twangs and bongs and all sorts of noises. Wow. And it's a great effect, you know. I mean, it's limited, and it's also a pain in the ass.
Yes.
And you run the risk of ruining a piano. So with a newspaper, I think George Martin's going, this is the sort of the recoverable John Cage version here.
Yeah. And again, they were still calling on him.
Yeah.
He didn't go treated that well at the time, I think. Yeah, and George wouldn't have had that much to do. But when it came to, George, we need you now. We need this newspaper and the piano or whatever.
And do we know what George Martin thought of the album Get Back that came out?
No, I think the Beatles would have had the final choice.
Yeah.
Really, and they didn't want it. But again, that's the thing, you know, they then took up Glenn John's idea of have all the fly-on-the-wall stuff.
Mm.
And I think they'd just given up on the whole thing. They just thought, yeah, we both, you know, John and George love Phil. Paul had no input in the fact that he was given those tapes, hence what happened after.
And that amazing letter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Don't ever do it again.
Yeah, never do this again. It's so straightforward, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see why, you know, that's... What have you done to his tunes, you silly American wall of noise? So For You Blue, it's a really unusual little flavour, this one, but this is a great way to kick off side two, isn't it?
Mm.
With a gin and tonic and,
yeah,
you know, kick back and enjoy this nice little George song. And it's very slight,
mm,
but works very well here in a way that kind of, you know, if George had, I don't know, say... one of his kind of more heavy-duty songs, something like While My Guitar Gently Weeps, it might have been a strange one to put here. You know, where it sits on the White Album, it sits really very well.
Yeah.
But this is the song you want to open up side two of the very enjoyable Get Back album that came out.
Yeah, it's like a little sorbet after side one rubs dinner.
Yes, and it goes nicely with that cool drink you've got
it
there.
It does, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
This is the story of a boy named Ted. If his mother said, Ted be good, he would. She told him tales about his soldier dad, but it made her sad, and she cried, oh my. Ted used to tell her he'd be twice as good, and he knew he could, 'cause in his head he said, Mama, don't worry now, Daddy boy's here, taking good care of you. Mama, don't worry now, Daddy boy's here, Teddy's gonna see you through.
Track two, Teddy Boy.
Yeah. Now, when I first heard the album Get Back, I grew up in Chelmsford, and there was a guy in Chelmsford Market who used to sell bootlegs. And towards the end of the 80s, everything he had was on cassette, I should say. Towards the end of the 80s, he, as they came out, he started to get and copy the Ultra Rare Tracks collection. Mm. And I got all, I think there were six of them at the time. I think eventually there were eight or maybe more. I got all six of those, and I asked him what else he had. And he said, I've got a few other bits and pieces. So he brought them to the market, and one was Get Back. And so the first version of, and this was before I'd heard McCartney. So I knew Teddy Boy in this version before I knew it in the finished version.
Oh, okay. Right.
And I still prefer this version, I think, because it's got a bit more kind of oomph to it.
Yeah.
It's got a bit more weight and a bit more swagger, even though, as McCartney rightly points out, there is that bit where it just seems to fall away, you know, where nothing happens. And you can hear... if they'd worked a bit longer on this, then there would have been something in there for Ringo to do, quite clearly, because McCartney's kind of dummying it in anyway as he's doing it. And this is probably the only song on the album which is actually sort of unfinished, as far as I can tell, because either he's forgotten the lyrics that he's just written or he hasn't written them yet. And it's also the only one on the album which I think has a bit of mean-spiritedness in it, which in that John, who is bored, quite clearly bored, is just taking the piss in the background with his "Take Your Partner's Do-Si-Do." And it's just, John, you're definitely spoiling this take. You are definitely spoiling it, and you know you are. You know you're spoiling it.
Take your partner's do-si-do. Hold them tight and don't let go. When you've got it, jump up. Take your partner's do-si-do. When you've got it, then let it go. Hold them tight and...
It reminds me, because Mark Lewisohn was saying about when they were at the in Hamburg and they were doing "Till There Was You," and John was doing the same thing. You know, Paul was going, "There were bells," and John's, "There were bells." "Oh, there were bells." Look, all the way through, and he's saying, you know, Paul McCartney wouldn't have taken that from anybody else. And even in 69, he was still doing it, but it's a bit nasty. There's an edge to it.
Yeah, I know.
And Paul was still, he would not take that from anyone else.
No.
But he ends it after all that, you know. Oh, well, there's that one for further consideration. Yeah. So he's aware that John's not keen.
It's interesting that this didn't end up in the film.
No.
That might have been a good decision, actually. So when Glyn John did his January 1970 mix, he put "Across the Universe" in place of this, did he?
Yeah.
Which is from a much earlier... It came out on the Wildlife record, didn't it?
Yeah.
In 68, yeah.
Yeah. So it's almost a different band.
Wow.
It's, you know, pre-India.
Yeah.
So there was still kind of like, you know, just after
Magical Mystery Tour, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
How weird.
Yeah.
I mean, but I suppose if you can cover something that you first recorded in 63 on the front of this album, then you can drop something in from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That would have been, I mean, is that the... oldest, if the album "Let It Be" had come out in 1970, then across the Universe had been on it, it would have been the oldest recording to have been released on a new thing, wouldn't it? Until
maybe "You Know My Name" on the B side of "Let It Be."
Yes, because that's from 67, isn't it?
Yeah, although they finished off the vocals on in 1969.
Now, was it Lewisohn who was saying that it's one of his favourite Beatles songs, "You Know My Name"?
I think, no, didn't he interview Paul? Paul said it was.
Right, yes, that's it. Yes, that's it. Book, yes, yes.
Which is brilliant.
It's great,
isn't
it?
What a great thing to love.
Because it is it's such a silly bit of work, isn't it? It's lovely. It's absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
We're just going to mess around, but at the end of it, there's a song. You know, that's great, isn't it? Mm. I mean, that's pretty much what songwriting is anyway, isn't it? You just mess around, at the end of it, there's a song. But here, not only do you get the song, you get the messing around as well, which is lovely.
Yeah.
And you sort of get that in Teddy Boy, I suppose, except that it's John messing around because he's bored. Which is, and I know, there's a kind of sense of something you never want to have done out loud facing forward in the Beatles is for John to go, "It's my band." You know, which obviously it was when it started out. And there's just a sense of this here.
Yeah.
There's a sense of the guy who's in charge is sitting at the back going, "Do we have to do this fucking song?" You know, it really does feel like that. It's the only mean-spirited one on here. But I prefer this version to the one that ends up on McCartney, which sounds so kind of lightweight to me. Mm. And this is one of these, McCartney's quite good at writing these songs about people's lives, which actually... If you sat and read the lyric sheet, you go, "This doesn't make any sense, and it's not particularly interesting." But when you hear it, like "Rocky Raccoon," but when you hear it as a song, you go, "No, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, oh yeah, it's about it's Teddy Boy, isn't it? Yeah, and his mum. Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
yeah, yeah." I've got a theory which I'm going to share. This is based on I'm going to share it now. Oh yeah, this is based on people that I've spoken to doing this. Nicky Campbell, who knows Ted Robbins.
Yeah.
Said Ted may have been the inspiration for this song.
Really?
Maybe the title, I'm thinking, and then Paul sort of moved on. So if it is about Ted Robbins, and then Kate Robbins, who was on before, said that she had a chat with Paul and he kind of alluded to the fact that Lady Madonna was about Kate's mum as well. So in theory,
wow,
there could be two Beatles songs, well, although it does exist in this universe, doesn't it?
Yes.
About Betty Robbins, Ted and Kate's mum.
Wow.
Wow. I might be wrong, but hopefully not.
Isn't that great? And, oh, if only they'd come out as a single.
Yeah.
A-side Lady Madonna, B-side Teddy Boy.
Oh, wow.
What a thing.
Yeah.
What a thing. You know, it's a bit like when after Joel and I did those, the Ladybird books of grown-ups, a few people got in touch with us who said, I'm the kid in that picture, you know.
Really?
And you sort of go, that would blow my mind. If I was in a Ladybird book, you know, it'd be like, if I had a Beatles song written about me, it'd be that kind of thing.
Yeah, wow.
Extraordinary. That's, you can't win that, can you? You know.
Good old Betty.
Birds going nowhere, spending someone's heart and pain. You and me Sunday driving, not arriving on our way back home. We're on our way home. We're on our way home. We're going.
Next, we have Two of Us.
Which is a song I love for its absolute simplicity. Mal Evans, I was reading, Mal Evans wrote a piece in Beatles book number 72 in July 69 about this album, where he was just describing it song by song. And in his breakdown, the title of this song is Two of Us on Our Way Home. It's the whole thing. Now, I'd never seen it referred to as that anywhere else, so I wonder whether it was at any point called that. I think in the recording sessions books, it's always just called Two of Us, isn't it?
I think he used to keep a lot of diaries. Obviously, he used to do a lot of writing.
Yeah.
And I think it's happened before on the Beatles. I forget which one it was, and I think it was talking about the White Album, and he was going, I think he did a poem or something, because he mentioned Not Guilty in it as well.
Oh, yeah.
The one that you won't hear. And I think he was there, and he probably... Maybe he didn't know what it was called. So I don't think they called it that. I think Mal might just written it
right,
down.
Right, that was his
that
one. Okay, yeah. Yes, and this, I love this song. This is one, I used to be in a band with a guy called Ben, and our band didn't have a name, but we were called Ben and Jason.
Yeah.
And one of the, there was a very, very short documentary on Channel 4, which we were in, and we were in the back of our tour bus, and we both had a guitar, and we were playing and harmonising Two of Us.
Wow.
Because it's really easy, is the thing. It's a very easy song. And I'm a terrible guitarist, so I just need something which means I don't have to move my hand very far, which is the riff at the front of this. You can pretty much stay in one place for that. But it's a great little song, this. It's lovely. And actually, is it about John and Paul? It probably isn't about John and Paul, is it?
No, it's supposedly about Paul and Linda, but it is so about John and Paul, whether they like it or not, I think.
Yeah, I do wonder, but, you know, I think there's a lot more to be said about this, and it's not going to be me who says it, but there is an interesting thing about couples. Because, you know, I think it was John, wasn't it, who said, like, I didn't get married to this band or something like that. There was obviously a bit of a tension between John and Paul about the couple John and Paul and the couples John and Yoko and Paul and Linda. You know, there was some kind of tension there. And I guess the tension was partly inherent because the two of them had been a couple in such a significant way for a significant number of years. And then suddenly they were both parts of other couples as well. And necessarily that you get pulled in different directions here. So even if you're not being pulled apart by your two other halves, maybe not even deliberately, you know, you're definitely facing in two different directions, and you found yourself in two couples, haven't you?
Mm.
So that must present you with a tension. I wonder whether actually this is just about being in a couple, this song, you know.
Mm. It's hard to differentiate, isn't it? This song could be sung to John and Paul and John and Yoko.
yeah,
and would still have the same meaning, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I think so. And it's lovely to hear the two of them just doing what they always did, you know.
Yeah.
Harmonising.
Yeah.
Singing along together. Another example of this album's enormous charm.
Mm.
Just a very, very charming, slight song. It's kind of, it's sort of a pair with For You, Blue, isn't it, really? It's
yes.
kind of, it's slightly insignificant, very charming, a little sorbet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens next?
Two of us segues into Maggie May.
Yes, which is... now, had the album Let It Be ever come out, which it didn't, this would have made no sense on there at all. luckily, on the album Get Back, which came out, this is just another bit of fun, isn't it? Mm. And it sort of sits rather well here.
Yes.
It's a bit like, you know, Rocker and Save the Last Dance and any of the bits of Chatter and the Gin and Tonic. You know, it's just one of those, it's another one of the members of that club, you know,
yeah.
who have also all come to play on this album.
Yeah.
I don't know what, I've never known what the lyrics are here in this tune. Do you never walk down Lime Street anymore? The judgy, filthy, guilty founder, an often homeward bounder, dirty, no good, Robin Magway, as a part of Liverpool. That next line.
Did you?
What? Yeah. What?
I don't think they are.
I mean, I could literally Google this now, but I'm not going to.
No.
That'd be cheating.
No. They kind of mumble, but whatever they mumble is the version that I know. If I saw the real lyrics, that'd be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a bit like that thing where you don't know the lyrics of something, but you know how they what sort of sound yeah. and shape they are, and yeah. that's what you sing. You
yeah.
know? And then one day you come across the lyric sheet and you go, really?
Yeah.
It's that?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's like when people try and sing Deck the Halls.
Yes.
Fa-la-la-la-la.
I remember seeing the lyrics to Come on Eileen once and went, what? How... No. The second verse, there's so many words in it, which Kevin Rowland just kind of runs through like a maniac.
Yeah.
These people round here wear beaten down eyes sunk in smoke-dried faces. They're so resigned to what their fate is. And you go, no, you try and sing that Blimey. In those sort of 10 notes you've got there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've no idea what the lyrics to Maggie May are. The other one is when they sing Danny Boy... The second line of that, I've got no idea what they're singing, but it's not the pipes
no.
are calling, is it?
Yeah, the old Savannah's calling. It's something like
is it
that.
The old? Oh, right.
I don't know.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like that. That's yeah. not the words though.
Yeah,
the old Savannah's calling.
So Maggie May. Now Maggie May was she a mythical Liverpudlian sex worker or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Marvelous.
Down on the docks.
Excellent. On the cast iron shore.
Yeah.
Good.
Dig it.
Now, you say dig it, Chris. I say fuck it. I'm going to allow this song to be on here because it's the Beatles and it's on their very successful released album Get Back. But boy is this bad. This is a real trudge, isn't it? I mean, it's hard work.
Mm.
It's only a jam session and really, jam sessions, they sort of ought to stay in the vaults, really.
I wonder, because it's obviously a much longer version than we hear on Let It Be, but of all the jamming they did, there must have been something else that could have been used to...
Well, even Rocker, the little filler track,
yeah.
after One Afternoon, is better than this.
Yeah.
And it has the advantage of being about 30 seconds long, whereas this one seems to go on for about a fortnight, you know? No, Dig It is... Dig It's not necessary, but do you know what? I have a theory as well.
Mm.
Every album that I love, I think there's one track on it that I simply couldn't give a shit about. I really couldn't. You know, I do find this all the time, all the time, and even with Beatles albums. And on this album, it's the, for instance, one of my favourite albums by one of my favourite bands, OK Computer, Radiohead. For some reason, I can't stand Karma Police.
All right. Okay.
And it's the one that they end all their gigs with. So whenever I've been to see Radiohead live, I sort of think, oh, I had to end with this one, didn't we? We couldn't end with something that I like. but it's this, it's Dig It on this album. You know? And I think that's fine. I think actually, you do want a bit of sand in your oyster, don't you?
Yes.
You know? So Dig It. I mean, is there much to say about Dig It?
There's a longer, well, there's an even longer version.
Is there?
Doing on the bootleg circuit.
Why
bootleg
is that?
Circuit.
wow.
Which it's got Heather, Linda and Paul's daughter. Heather's on there.
Oh, going, hang on.
Doing what? The Yoko thing.
Guys, you mean you've missed the charming bit off?
Yes. It is really charming.
On this charming album, you've left the charming bit off this tune.
Yeah. Oh. And that's, there's also another rehearsal they did with Heather singing, which is a brilliant song, which they did, I think they jammed it once. It's a George song called I Told You Before. I told you before to walk out the door, but don't come back again. And it's this, if they'd finished that, you can hear it as some sort of late 60s Santana kind of song. And they did it, well, it went on for about 20 minutes.
I've never heard that.
Oh, Google
Man,
it.
I thought I was good on the boots.
Google it.
By the way, the guy at Chelmsford Market, I stopped buying cassettes off him after I bought a copy of, he said, oh, I've got another rare one here. And it was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, brackets, mandolin and synth mix. Right. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Sort of ingenue 17-year-old me, took it home, put it on and went, someone has overdubbed mandolins and synth on to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And then I thought, just a minute, synths, 1967?
Yeah.
Nah. So, yeah, that was the end of my buying cassettes from him. I then found a CD dealer in Billericay.
Oh.
who I could get ultra-rare tracks from at incredible prices. God, they were 20 quid each, and that was in 1990.
Yeah. Record fairs. I went to a record fair last year, actually, the first one I've been to in probably a decade. And I used to obsessively, you know, pre-internet, I guess, obsessively go to any record fair. I'd drive miles and miles. And there'd be a little guy, I can't remember his name, just Bootleg Ron, I called him. He just seemed to work. And he had his little tray under it. Have you got any interesting Beatles stuff? And he'd come out with all this, you know, box sets.
Did you have code for it like that?
Oh, yeah, it was a special wink. And, it was such an exciting thing going through. And there was so many that duplicated tracks. So I think there was the Unsurpassed Masters as well, which kind of the same thing. But the one I had was Artifacts as well, which was a box set. And they were just blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. And then the anthologies came out.
Yes.
So in the mid-90s, there was just tons of Beatles material that nobody had ever heard before for a really ready market, slap bang in the middle of Britpop.
It was a good time for it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were very rich and expensive years. Yeah. Very expensive years. But it's so easy to get hold of this stuff now, you know. You and I, I'm sure, both know 5 or 6 blogs where we could pretty much download any minute of any available Beatles recording that we wanted, you know.
Yeah.
Even down to the isolations from the 5-1 mixes of the White Album, the recent re-release, and, you know, they're all doing the rounds now, you know. So there's nothing you can't really get your hands on.
No.
It's a shame that Get Back isn't the missing Beatles album, isn't it? Joel and I did write a sketch about a missing Beatles album for a radio show called Agendum. And I think it was inspired by the fact that we realised that the Beatles could simply sell us anything and we'd buy it.
Beatles fans all over the world were in a state of stunment this week at the discovery of a previously unheard album by the Beatles. The LP, Beatles Ahead, was recorded in late 1963, but the band forgot to release it. Devon Clogg is inside his own report.
EMI is remaining firm-lipped for now, but some titles have leaked, including You Won't Like It, said to be a raucous John Lennon rocker, I'd Buy You a Bus, a romantic Paul McCartney ballad, and Nobody's Nobody's Somebody, an early George Harrison dirge. One Beatle came out of the woodwork today, much like the Death Watch Beatle that does so much damage to rafters in old buildings, to comment.
I do vaguely remember recording it, you know, but we were so busy back then, it was mad. You know, an album, another album, a film, a tour, a telly. It was easy to forget you'd written and recorded 14 songs, but it was a good little album, you know, some cracking tunes on it.
Fans can hear some of Beatles Ahead, though. The first note of the album has been released and has, predictably, gone to the top of the download charts. Toyle Barnaty.
Oh, that's a great note. I can't stop listening to it. Can you play it again?
I'm glad people are enjoying it. It's a good little note. Brings back so many memories. I remember writing I'll Never Dance Over You in the dressing room at Twickenham between shooting the lacrosse sequence in Hard Day's Night. I'd hum you some, but I won't.
EMI publicity director, Liv Gambrinus.
Obviously, this note is big news for Beatles completists, and especially for them, we will be releasing a box set this Christmas for around £200, with all the Beatles albums, plus the note remastered on its own disc. All we'll say is that if you enjoy buying the Beatles albums, you'll have plenty of opportunities over the next decade.
Rock mathematician Brian May has calculated that we can expect to hear the whole of Beatles Ahead in around 2032. Or, in the words of the record, if it could talk, and adjusted for strict accuracy, when I'm 69.
Devon Clogg.
I remember that I queued outside Tower Records to get the first anthology when it came out.
Yeah.
And because it opened at midnight. I said, at midnight, oh, right, we're going to start selling it, because that's the day it's released. So, and I queued up and went in, like these schmoes who queue outside the Apple store now because the iPhone 305 is coming out.
What do they know?
What do they know? There's a difference between Apple and the Beatles. Apple and Apple. I remember thinking when Anthology came out, there were a couple of things they'd done on them where they'd done things like they cross-faded from one thing to another thing, and I thought, It's a slightly disappointing judgment that has happened there. And then, of course, when you think about it in the longer term, you go, well, that's because one day you'll probably sell me the two tracks that you cross-faded separately, won't you? Yeah. And I don't want to sound cynical, because I don't think they are necessarily cynical, but that you do get the feeling that is how it is with Apple Enterprises sometimes. You know, we've got a lot... There's only a finite amount of Beatles stuff, so they've got to find ways of re-exploiting it, I suppose.
Mm.
It does make sense. It's an enormous revenue stream for them, isn't it?
But they still ignore 2 years' time. Will they release the Star Club tapes? Don't think they will.
Well...
It's the 60th anniversary. But I'm suspecting that they're going to do from Please Please Me up to Revolver, so they've all been... You know, jazz remixed.
Yeah.
But then you'll get the box set of the albums and you'll just be buying it again, and then there'll be another anniversary of something else. But it seems to be the Star Club tapes, Decca tapes. There's a lot of Beatles stuff that's out there that they just have been rewritten out of history. They want this particular story.
That's true. That's where Lewison and some of the other biographers are doing such good work just by looking at the story from different angles. And that's why I wondered about this, his revelation that during January 69, they were pretty much having a good time with a few exceptions. Whether I wondered, is it the case that the Beatles themselves remembered that time as an unhappy period, even though it wasn't necessarily, they just arrived at that conclusion? I mean, anybody watching the film Let It Be would conclude that was the case. You go, well, they don't seem to be enjoying themselves there, do they? Even on the rooftop. You know, that woman on the pavement who is screaming during the guitar bend is funnier than anything else that happens in the film, you know. Yeah. And yet, you listen to the rooftop songs on the album Get Back that came out, and they sound fantastic. Mm. You know, they're full of life. Mm. and full of joy. There's a lot of joy in this. Anyway, that's Dig It.
Yeah, didn't think we'd ever need to talk about that.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be.
Next we have Let It Be.
Now, this is where I think we have to... We're going to have to get more hats for Glyn Johns to take them off, because this is where the track listing of this thing says, you didn't have a fucking clue what was coming, did you? Look what we've got left.
Yeah.
Because at the end of this album, you get Let It Be, followed by The Long and Winding Road, and you go, what?
Yeah.
You had that left? You're joking.
Yeah.
We've had all this good stuff, and you had these two, and not only have you put them at the end of the album, you've put them next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that it every way seems counterintuitive. You wouldn't put the two piano ballads next to each other, would you? No.
Absolutely.
Like, you wouldn't put the three songs in A major next to each other, would you? No. And you definitely wouldn't put the piano ballads at the end of the album that starts with One After 909, would you? No. Well, I'm doing all those things, yeah. And screw you, because I'm Glyn Johns and we're the Beatles, you know. And it works brilliantly. It's an absolute masterstroke.
Mm.
Also, these two, Let It Be and Long and Winding Road, which are so, so saccharine in the Phil Spector versions, are so heartfelt here. Just that you're not lathering on all that unnecessary fucking angelic choir and things, you know. And at the same time, they've got a simplicity about them. What there is a pomposity in those Spector versions and a syrupiness where I think he feels he needs to squeeze some more stuff out of them, and you don't need to. This is Paul McCartney. You don't need to fuck with him. You know, you can just leave Paul McCartney doing his Paul McCartney thing. He happens to be the best person in the world at being Paul McCartney. Don't think you can shiny him up. He doesn't need it, you know. And it's spoken to brilliantly by the end of this album, because these two... They sound wonderful. They sound absolutely wonderful. They're great performances. They're not perfect either. There are a few places on this album where there are mistakes and they've been kept. You know, it's the equivalent of the alarm clock in A Day in the Life. So in Let It Be, on the last Mother Mary, he plays the wrong chord at the beginning of the bar, and it's kept in there. Yeah. There's a bit on Dig a Pony where McCartney plays the wrong bass line at one point, you know, but they leave it in. You go, it's all right, because this is, as McCartney said, this is the Beatles getting their act together.
Yeah.
This is them getting their act together. And here's what they can do when they do ballads, and you stick them at the end of the album.
Yeah.
And yet, one of the finest bits in this is between these last two songs, between Let It Be and The Long and Winding Road, you've got that lovely little clip of John saying, are we meant to giggle during the solo?
Yeah.
So right till the end, they're keeping the humour, they're keeping the fun, they're keeping the charm of the album front and centre, even though you've got these two beautiful songs.
Yeah, and it's not cynical, John, either. He's playful.
It's very playful.
After these two heart-wrenching songs. And...
It's very playful. Long and Winding Road as well. I was convinced I could hear vibes in it, but it mustn't be. It must be Billy Preston on the Fender, but mixed right back. So there's almost nothing there. And also, there's almost nothing for him to do in this. So all he's doing is he's just marking some chord changes here and there. But again, just hardly anything, but what a brilliant bit of judgment on his part.
Yeah. And it's a lovely solo as well on Winding Roads.
That's something else, isn't it?
Very simple.
It's beautiful, yeah. And it's kind of semi-classical in a way. You know, it's a bit, it's not quite In My Life, you know, George's extraordinary kind of baroque piano solo in that. But it's got a kind of, there are no blues in this.
No.
You know, this is very much a straightforward major scale, you know.
Mm.
So it's not like Don't Let Me Down or something like that.
No.
But it's beautiful. And again, I think he's doing it in octaves again. I think it's that same thing. So clearly that was one of his trademarks, was that he played his solos in octaves to give them some extra kind of spine.
Get back, get together. Get back home. Oh, we gotta get together.
We end with the Get Back reprise.
Yes.
I think looking at side two, they're all Paul songs bar one, and the only John one is Dig It.
Yeah.
So maybe John would have been instrumental in not wanting this version out.
That's possibly true, yeah. Which is a little kind of nod to Sgt. Pepper, isn't it?
Mm.
And also a nice, another full circle along with the cover.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We've come back to a point at which, you know, because on the cover, even though the song Get Back does not, it's a nice mirror because it's the end of side one and the end of side two. The thing doesn't start with Get Back, but it says Get Back on the cover of this album that came out in July 1969.
Yeah.
So that's another little, another great bit of architecture by Glyn Johns. He really put this together well. He did a very good job. And I think it must have been, I guess it must have been rather heartbreaking for him that that in the parallel universe that is real life, this album didn't see the light of day.
Yeah, he was not keen. There's been interviews with him. He's just not happy at all. You can understand it.
He's happy to talk about not being happy, though, is he?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Shame, because it's such a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, in this.
Well, I think he referred to it as my album.
Yeah.
It was his baby. He loved it, what he'd done. But it's suddenly someone taking the baby away and covering it in syrup. Where am I going with this?
We've rolled the baby in syrup, and now we're going to roll it in oats. Now,
it's just like that.
I seem to remember that Danny Baker, who you might remember, he used to be on the radio. Danny Baker did an interview with Glyn Johns, and Johns mentioned to Baker that he had two acetates of Get Back. And Danny said, cool, I'd love one of those. And shortly after he'd done the interview, it arrived in the post.
Wow. If Danny Baker's listening, can I borrow it?
Yeah, Danny, can you please get it copied, like now, and by someone, you know, not you. Please get someone professional to copy it as soon as you can, mate, because acetates don't live forever.
Tell me, overall, what you think of this album?
Well, I love it. I love it. And I'm just so pleased to listen back to it again and to be being struck anew by the charm of it. It's a very good album. It's a fun album. It's got an astonishing shape to it. The way it ends is not what you're expecting and is brilliant. And those two songs next to each other, they're kind of stronger next to each other than they are in any other configuration, I think, in some way. There's so much fun on this album. It's the sound of a band that you love, letting you in, letting you behind the scenery, which is always a thrill. You know, who was it? There was a writer who said, audiences love how to. Meaning, if you're doing the Italian job, you've got to show them planning the job as well. Because you've got, then we get the van in here, and then they turn off the traffic lights. You know, the audiences love that. And this is a bit of how to, you know. This is behind the scenes. This has got the same charm that there used to be when Kenny Everett did a TV show and you could hear the crew laughing, you know.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of thing. It's got, I'm in the room. I'm in the room with them, you know.
Yeah.
And it fits perfectly between the White Album and between the the real culture shock that is the opening of Abbey Road. Because as a sound, the opening of Come Together, you go, what's happening? Yeah. I don't really know what's happening. It's bone dry and very, very compressed, you know? And it's a completely different sound. Mm. And this kind of leaves, would have said, we put a lid on that era now, in a way that going, jumping from Good Night and the end of the White Album to Come Together is kind of odd. But if you go, now, and here we are having a party on Get Back, and then there's a pause, and then you go, right, now it's a serious album.
Yeah.
You know, it's there. It's great. It's part of the canon. I don't regard it as unreleased. I really don't. And I'm happy. I've got a lot of music on my phone, including a lot of Beatles. But the only album I've got all of, the only Beatles album I've got all of on my phone is Get Back.
Wow.
And that's not me being deliberately perverse or kind of counterintuitive or cleverer than you. It's just I just happen to love it. It's a real friend of an album.
Jason, it's been a pleasure.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming back. It's been a joy.
That's all right. Hey!